Good morning, everyone. My name is John. I'm an Alateen and a recovering alcoholic. Hey. I would like to thank the committee first for asking me to share my stories. And let's see. 5 years ago, before I joined Alateen, I always wondered, you know, what my life was going to be like later. And, you know, I look back on it now, and I'm glad that Alateen was there for me. When I was younger, I always thought something was wrong with me because I didn't know how to deal well with situations. I always thought that my decisions were inadequate and, you know, they just weren't any good. I had a real low self-esteem, and it took 5 years of Alateen to bring that up. And Alateen to me is sharing with people that you can relate to. I know that if I went to a group with full of adults, the only thing I'd probably have to relate to was basing on a mother and son relationship. And with Alateen, it's more of a friend to friend and somebody who you can trust. So Alateen is good for teenagers. I'm glad they started the group. I've been recovered alcoholic for 2 years now, and I'm thankful for that. Although alcoholism is not the main problem, I don't think. A lot of it has to do with how you feel about yourself. And I was born in Valdosta, Georgia. And after I was born, my parents separated, and we moved to Macon. And she remarried after about 6 months. And so I grew up knowing different people as my fathers and different people as my mothers because my dad remarried also. All of my first memories of my first stepdad was weren't so hot. You know, the abuse was there, and I would watch my mom get yelled at and stuff, and so it sort of started teaching me how to have a relationship right there, because you're learning new things. And so the first thing I was taught was to when you get mad, you yell, and you don't tell how you really feel. You tell what's wrong with the other person. And so that was my first memories and my first actions, probably. As I grew up and got a little older, I started going to school, and I was probably about 3. And school had always been a problem for me. I hated authority figures. I had resentment toward them. And so whenever I was in school and somebody would tell me what to do, you know, my first reaction was to get mad. And you know, it still happens to me today. I still don't like authority figures. I like them, but I don't like people telling me what to do. I reckon that's normal. So my mom started sending me to psychiatrists because she thought, well, I don't know what she thought, but anyway, I started going to psychiatrists. And I didn't know what was going on. All I noticed, he would, you know, he'd show little pictures and ask what you saw him and stuff like that. And he told my mom I was normal, and there seemed to be nothing wrong with me. But as time went on, I started being able to see my dad. I had visiting rights at, I think I was 4, and he had remarried also. And I went to that world. It's like another world. Drugs were in that world, and I'd go over there, and you know, he'd be drinking and stuff like that. So I would go into there, and I got to know my dad a little bit as time went on, and he was real lenient with me as far as letting me do things. And so I started liking him more because I never had to worry about him telling me what to do. I always did what I wanted to, and it started affecting me there too. When I would leave my dad's and go back to my mom would say, you know, you changed, your attitude's different, and I didn't see it, but I can see it today. There was a lot of shame in my family as far as right and wrong. You know, if you there's this way to do it, and if you do it another way, then it's not going to turn out like it's supposed to. And so there was a lot of boundaries on a lot of things as far as what you could do. And freedom was very limited at my mom's house. It sort of, it wasn't there a lot of times. At my dad's house, it was. And so as I was going through these stages, I was learning two different personalities, or I was getting two different personalities, I thought. And it started affecting my schoolwork more and more, and how I felt about myself. I didn't really know myself. I didn't know who I was, because at my dad's I was one person, and at my mom's I was another. My mom got a divorce after about 7 months with this her first husband, and you know, she met another person, and I was also learning this, you know. And so she remarried him, and we moved to another place in Macon, and to a house. And I thought, you know, this is cool, because we live in a house. Now, we had lived in apartments before, and I was in third grade, and that's when I started failing, and my schoolwork. That's when I made my first F, and nobody knew, you know, what it was. And while I was doing it, you know, I thought that my study habits were not so good. And I was getting blamed for a lot of this, my stuff that I didn't know how to study or anything. And so my mom started trying to teach me how to study. The bad thing about it is when, you know, you didn't get something right. We wound up fighting because it was like, you need to learn this now. In this way, and I was like, I don't know how to learn it this way. You know, I can do it this way, but not this way. So we wound up fighting and never getting anything done. So then I'd wind up saying, well, I call my dad. I go to his house. I live with him, and it became a power struggle. You know, because I knew that she didn't want me to go to my dad's, because she knew of the drugs. And so whenever that would happen, things would, I don't know, straighten out, go my way. Fourth grade came along, and I was still flunking in school. And my mom started sending me to more psychiatrists, and this time she gave me I think it's an EEG. And that really made me wonder if something was wrong with me, because, you know, not every fourth grader gets an EEG to see, you know, if his brain's working right. So I got that, and it turned out normal. And my grandma picked me up from that place, and she told me that there was nothing wrong with me, and she assured me that my mom just did it. My grandma really didn't know why my mom did it. She just assured me there was nothing wrong with me. And so time went on, and during this, I always loved my grandparents. I would always go to their house and stay with them. That was somebody that I could really trust and love, and grandparents are probably the best things a kid can have. I would stay with them, and I don't remember a lot of staying with them, except, you know, there's a couple times when I was little. The times I started remembering staying with them is when I was older. And that's another thing. A lot of my childhood, I don't remember. And I'm still trying to figure that out. I think it has a lot to do with blocking out pain. Some of it was very painful, and I sort of blocked it out. And I know some days things will happen, and then I'll remember a little bit of my childhood. It'll bring back a memory or something. And so I've learned that we do block things out, and that teaches us to hide things and not feel also. My dad this time was really heavy into drugs, and I thought it was cool. I thought my dad was the coolest man around because he was so mellow. You know, we'd go to the mall and he would buy me lots of stuff. And, you know, I said, this is a great dad right here. But, you know, I never looked at the fact that he woke up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then we would go, you know, he'd go to sleep probably about 11 or 12, wake up at 3. And he would always say he was tired. And I only thought my dad drank and smoked a little pot until later I found out he was doing really heavy stuff. And that kind of got to me. And as I got a little older, I found out that I was more powerful than my mom. And that she could only tell me what to do. And that kind of got to me a little bit. And so I started using that a little more and more because I knew that all she could do was tell me. And my defiance was really, really bad. She could tell me to do this, and I could say no. I could tell her, no, you know, I'm not going to do this. And so our relationship started going down the drain. And then she's still married to the same guy at this time. And I was being real defiant as far as not doing what she told me, but I always thought that was normal. And at school, I always got along well with my friends at school. And when I would come home, I always dreaded coming home because I knew that when I came home, it was going to be the same way. And I always wondered, you know, how could it be different? And I really didn't know another way as far as how to handle a situation. And so I started just doing what I reckon I thought was best, and that was, you know, just go with it and have fun, you only live once. And that was my attitude toward things for a while. I first drank with my dad, and that was a pleasant experience. I thought now that he knew about it, it didn't matter. You know, I could do it, and somebody would say, you know, what if your dad found out? Like, well, he's the one who gave it to me. How about that? And so I had the coolest dad as far as my friends were concerned because, you know, he let me drink in front of him. I never really did, though. I didn't like the taste of it too much. And my schoolwork was still going down the drain. When I got in sixth grade, my sixth grade teacher told my mom that maybe I had a learning disability. And I'd gone through 7 years of school, and the teacher finally says, well, maybe he has a learning disability. And there's this place in Atlanta that maybe we can send him to. So now I thought, you know, I said, you know, I asked my mom where this was, and she was like, well, it's this place. It was a boarding school to maybe just straighten me up. And, you know, I didn't understand why they wanted to send me to a boarding school, you know, because I was like, I really don't need it. And so we went up there, and the teacher went with us, my sixth grade teacher went with us, and we talked to some people, and my mom asked me, she said, is this something you want to do? And I told her no. And my stepdad was for it. He wanted me to go. Me and my stepdad really never got along because I used the excuse, you're not my dad. You know, y'all have to listen to you. I don't have to do what you say. And that came in with authority figures again. So me and my stepdad really never got along. So he wanted me to go here, I thought. And my mom said, it's up to you. And I chose not to go. But I wound up failing sixth grade. And I went to the school in Macon for kids with learning disabilities. And I went in there, and most of the kids in there, I noticed right off, I got along really well with. And most of them, I think today, didn't even have a learning disability. I think most of them had dysfunctional families, and their parents were in the same boat mine were as far as what to do, because my parents didn't know anything was wrong with them. You know, they thought I was the bad one, or they thought they were raising me wrong, but, you know, they didn't think about their what they're doing, you know, as far as they didn't have a program at all. So most of the kids I got along really well with. That was really my wild days, because the school, I lived right down the street from the school, so I'd walk to school, and I started just, you know, you never did anything in the school. It was the teachers were very lenient. They didn't even teach you. The purpose of the school was to learn at your level. So I didn't do nothing. I just stood around and, you know, played with my friends and stuff. And right now I should have been seventh grade. So I was learning about, you know, hanging out with your friends and getting people to pick you up and take you places. I met a friend there who could drive. Well, that was cool, because I told him I lived right down the street. He'd come pick me up and we could go party or something. And so we did, and it was fun. And my mom, you know, she started finding out about that I was smoking and that I was drinking and stuff like that. And she didn't really know what to do. I told her I would quit. I told her I wouldn't quit smoking. I told her, you know, some things I had to do. So I was living there, and at this time, my mom was, during this time that I started going to the school, my mom and her husband got another divorce. So we had moved out of the house and moved into this apartment, and the one right beside the school. And so we were living, just me and her, and, you know, she was going through a hard time because she didn't know what was wrong with her, and I was going through a hard time because I didn't know what was wrong with her and what was wrong with her relationships and why she couldn't keep somebody. And we still fought a lot. Power struggles big time. Over little stuff. It wasn't really this stuff, like clean up your room. It wasn't really the room that needed cleaning. It was a lot of stuff that was inside that we didn't know about. So she was gone a lot because she was trying to find somebody else to take care of her and me. She wanted the dad role model. She said I needed a dad role model. And I tried to explain to her that, you know, that was a little late because I'd already had three. And so, you know, I had different role models as far as what to learn. So I learned different things from different people. And my dad had remarried also. You know, I didn't see him a lot. I don't remember seeing him a lot. The times I spent with him were they didn't have a lot of memories there because, I really don't know what happened. The room, a lot of times I just remember the room full of smoke, and then he may have some people over, and then I would wake up. So I reckon, the only thing I could think of was the drugs, the secondhand smoke and stuff like that. So a lot of that I don't remember. My parents, I never remember my parents hitting me except for my stepdad, my mom's second husband. He used to, when he would get mad, we made this, I hate talking about this, but we made this paddle. And it was a big paddle. And he said, he used to say, well, I want you to make this with me so you have a part in it too. And I never understood that. And he always said, you know, I hope I never have to use this. And, you know, I never really thought that it would get used, but it did. And it hurt pretty bad. And, you know, I never really liked being hit. I don't think anybody does. And so when I would get hit, you know, a lot of times I would get mad and, you know, do something irrational. Not really irrational, out of defense. And, you know, I'd wind up either, you know, jerking away and running or, you know, throwing something, you know, just to let them know that I didn't like it too much. And and he also used a belt, you know, buckle. And, like, you know, his excuse was, if you're not still, I'm just going to hit you wherever it lands. My mom never knew about this until right before they got a divorce. And that's one of the reasons that she left. So anyway, my dad had remarried, and he was into drugs, and I started drinking on a regular basis. On the weekends, I would get my friend to come pick me up, and we'd go out and find something to do. So I started living in a big-time fantasy world because, you know, school is no problem because you couldn't fail at the school. You could just not go. And I went because I liked it. I went there for 2 years. I got out. And that night, the graduation night, I went to this party. And that's when I realized that I thought I had a problem, you know, because my dad had been associating with AA, and I learned a little about what alcoholism was and what an alcoholic was, and I realized then I had a problem. My grandparents had to come pick me up, and the people that we had the party, their parents told my grandparents all the stuff that happened, and I was really ashamed because my grandparents saw me as a perfect grandkid, I felt like they really hurt them and stuff, and I was really feeling bad. And so, my mom, she had met this new guy, of course, and I was always jealous of her husband. I didn't feel like she gave any of her attention to me. And when I was younger, she did, because I reckon, you know, when you're younger, you need to be held. When you're older, you don't need to be held as much as you need to be listened to and people to listen to your problems and stuff. So I never really had that. So the only way I got my problems out was either taking them out by vandalizing stuff. We used to do things that, you know, now if I saw somebody doing it, I'd probably get really mad. And I could understand where they were coming from. And I'd probably get along with them real well. But we did things, and that was a way to get my aggression out. And I didn't know how to take it out by communicating or anything. And so my mom, she met this new guy, and he was over a lot. And whenever he would come over, you know, I'd make little smart remarks about stuff. And she always told me not to talk about her other husbands, but that was the worst thing she could have said, because I did. But time went on. And my mom told me of a place called Alatine, and I was 13, and she told me this place, and she said she knew a woman whose son went there. I was like, well, okay. And she wanted to know if I wanted to try. So I said, yeah, you know, I was up to trying anything. And so I went in my first meeting, and I was a little nervous, because there was people my age there. You know, either at that time, I either got along well with adults or little kids. At school, when I went to a real school, I had trouble getting along with little kids. I was never, I don't know, I just always had trouble getting along with people my age, I thought. But I don't really. It was just a psychological thing, I reckon. Anyway, so I went to this place, and there's people my age here, and I was a little skeptical to talk about my stuff. And so, I talked a little bit about what was going on in my family as far as what was happening. And I heard other people talking, and they started relating. I started relating to them. And it was kind of neat because, you know, at first I thought, you know, maybe, you know, I was, you know, somebody unique and that had these problems. And, you know, not everybody had these problems. And I learned that people have these problems, but they're different to each person. So I started coming regularly, and it built up. I made a lot of friends. Trusting was becoming an option for me now, what was then. But still something was wrong. I was going regularly, and I was making friends, but my drug habits were still there. And, you know, I'd get a little better by going to the meetings, and then I'd go out and drink and stuff, and it would all come back, the pain and stuff. So during all this time, all this was going on, I moved out of my mom's house. I moved to my grandparents, and I started living with my grandparents. And, you know, my mom was going through stuff, and she went to a hospital, and you know, my dad was living, he was living in Alabama, and he had gotten to AA, and he got his life straightened out as far as drugs, and he was still working on his other stuff. And so, but, you know, I was living with my grandparents, and one day, you know, I'd been in Alateen for a while, and a lot of those days were filled with sadness. It felt like something was missing. You know, I started going to a regular school, and I flunked my first year, ninth grade. Most of it, well, I thought a lot of it was I didn't know what I was doing, because when I was in the other school, that learning disability school, you know, we stuck with the general math and never any English. So I went to the school, and I went to the classes, and everybody was talking about participle phrases and gerunds and stuff like this, and I didn't really understand math, really. I was never good at math anyway, so this really shocked me. You know, I'd only heard of algebra. My mom had talked about it in college, so I had never really thought about it. So I failed my ninth grade year, and I was starting to drink more, and I was hanging out with friends that really drank, and so that was forming my life and what it was going to be, you know, down the road. So, and I'd been in Alateen, and I talked to my sponsor, and she, a best friend of mine had gone into treatment, and we talked about it, and I decided I was going to go to treatment. And so I went home, and I told my grandparents that I needed to go to treatment, and they didn't know, you know, they were shocked. They didn't think I had a problem, or they didn't think I had a bad enough problem. They didn't think treatment was what I needed. I don't know what they thought I needed, but they didn't think treatment was it. But I went. My dad was living in Alabama, and at this time he was clean, and he worked at a treatment center. So I went to that one, and stayed there for about a month and a half, and I got the drugs and alcohol out of my system, and I learned how to, well, they gave me the tools to learn how to feel and learn that feelings, you know, there's no validation. If, you know, you don't have to validate your feelings. You either have them or you don't. That was a good tool. I learned a little bit of self-worth as far as you know, at school, nobody, you know, they're just not better than you. Self-confidence was improving. So I came back to Alateen clean, and I started working my program, and I did my fourth step, which was pretty tough, because I thought that what I had done, nobody else had done, and I realized after a while that wasn't true. You know, a lot of people had done the same things I'd done. A lot of people had done worse. So I started realizing that I wasn't unique in those ways. You know, but I started realizing that I was changing my life around. You know, I always dreaded being like my dad as far as drugs. And I told myself, I'm never going to be like my dad. And so when I started getting into drugs, I realized when I went to treatment that, you know, if I hadn't quit, that I'd be like my dad and my mom. So I started changing my life around, and slowly, very slowly. You know, I had those days where I thought that, you know, it wasn't even worth it. It wasn't worth going through, you know, because it was so depressing. It's, you know, sitting at school and stuff, and I was real self-conscious about the way I looked and acted, and I thought that, you know, if I had the best of this, that people would like me more. So when a group of people were out at lunch, you know, I would separate and I would hang out with the you know, the crowd, two or three people that I was close to. I never really needed a lot of acquaintances. I was more of a independent, private person. You know, one or two friends was all I needed. But as the years went on, things started getting better. And I started feeling better about myself. And I was still going to Alton through all this. And, you know, now things are a lot better. I'm graduating this year. And that was a goal that I didn't even look at 2 years ago, you know. I thought, you know, that was way down the road. So when I started picking up my schoolwork and going to summer school and stuff like that, you know, I finally caught up with my class. And I've stayed sober for 2 years. I haven't drank. And that's really tough because you have peer pressure, a lot of it. And, you know, it's kind of tough to deal with because, you know, when you're at school and on the weekends and stuff, you have to find friends that don't drink. The real friends that don't drink, you know. Of course, people have acquaintances. And so if I'm around people that drink, you know, like when I'm, of course, and like when you're riding around or something and you pull up in a parking lot, there's people there. And I have my real friends with me, it's easier to leave because I don't feel like I have to be sociable with them. So most of the time I hang out with my good friends and I felt a lot better about myself. And so graduating's in the picture now. And I'm also looking forward to a good future. Alateen has been good for me, and people that are in there. If your kids go, or whoever, you know, they have a better chance of turning their life around, and family problems tend to get better if they, you know, they have to do some stuff. But you know, eventually, I don't know, there's not a perfect place, but every day you get a little better, and some days you go back a little bit. But I can look back now, a year ago, and realize that things are a lot better than, you know, now than they were then. So, all in all, everything goes for the best. The thing I learned most in Alateen was sharing and being honest and learning how to talk, because without talking, you know, nothing ever gets said. And so sharing and being honest, because anybody can lie, nobody else will know but you, so that really doesn't help, and I thought that would help, you know, but it doesn't. So that's about all. Thank you.